Film Vault. Welcome to the Film Vault. Thanks for joining us. That's Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts. Top five this week. Top five movies set in the 1950s.
Yeah.
50s movies. Movies about the 50s, obviously made after the 50s. Movies made in the 50s don't count. These are movies about the era, the 1950s.
I tried to be real clever, Brian, and I looked. I'm not going to say that hard, but I did look for a movie from the past about the future that was in the 50s. How cool would that have
been? Was there anything good enough to consider?
No. But that would have been pretty sweet.
That would have been something. Yeah. So, but no. Top five movies about the 50s. Top five movies set in the 50s. However you want to say it. We're talking about films set in that decade. In Anderson category, you're very passionate. Very passionate about this.
I wouldn't say that, but...
You wouldn't?
I feel good about tonight's episode today.
What made you think about this?
What was it? I was watching some... Oh, it was next week when we... Oh, I can't talk about it because I'll...
Right.
I'll give away my number one pick.
Boom.
But we do anti-heroes next week on next week's episode.
Top five anti-heroes next week.
And you know what? I kind of messed up there. I meant to mention that Nicolas Cage, he's not on my list at all next week. Top five anti-heroes. But he's made a living doing anti-heroes.
Right.
I could probably make an entire 5-to-1 list with nothing but Nicolas Cage.
This is good. A prelude to next week.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's what made me think of it. I think number one took place somewhat in the 50s anyways.
How do you generally come up with your category ideas? Because generally for me, I'll come across a movie that I haven't thought of in a while. And I'll be like, man, that's a really good movie. Or a bad movie or whatever it is, and that part of that movie or whatever, that would be a really good blah blah blah. I'm like, if that's definitely fits in a top five, this and that, oh, that'd be a good top
honestly
five.
A lot of times when I'm watching a movie that I've already seen before and I'm drinking and the mind is wandering away from the movie itself and I'm thinking of things that are about that movie, or I'll just wait for you to send me a few a few different options, mm-hmm. so that I can reject them and then tweak them.
Yep.
But like, I like your one that you came up with recently, which is top five directors we've fallen out of love with.
We're top five directors you've broken up with.
However, I am pissed.
Mm-hmm.
Got away from me this year. But Logan and I, one of our favorite episodes from last year, top five Sundance films.
Oh, I was
we're
hoping.
We're bringing it back.
No, we're not.
Oh, we're
Sundance
gonna
is going on as we speak.
Listen, Sundance is an important, it's gross and disgusting, but it's a very important place where many of the biggest movies of the year will first be talked about, screened, and critiqued over there. And I'm saying, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do the next couple of weeks. We're going to do top five movies that came out of Sundance, because they're movies that essentially what it is it's an overview of,
oh my God,
of five movies we're excited to see before the end of the year. Oh yeah. Cause we do summer and we do fall. Why not do Sundance towards the beginning?
Hold on. I'm not done yet.
And then at the end, and during that episode at some point, we're going to give a few Oscar locks. There's no way I'm going to give you an entire fucking episode where we do nothing but Oscar locks, because this year's Oscars, speaking of which, they were released earlier this
week.
You're
all over the place. Stop. The one
Oscar
thing –
Oscar locks is not going to hold up and be its own episode.
Holy shit. The one thing that episode I had going for it, the Sundance episode, mm-hmm. was that it was timely, that it was like coming up. People
that came out of Sundance.
Oh, it's our worst episode ever.
No,
by a long shot, by the way.
No,
and the fact that you even consider doing it again is it shows me you haven't learned anything.
I am allergic to some things.
To learning? To learning from mistakes?
How are things going, though? How is everything? How's the health? You doing all right?
Chemo's kind of rough.
You started chemo again last week?
No, I did. I did, chemo infusions. I have to say the chemotherapy that I'm on currently, the one-time a month injection, is much preferable to the five pills mm-hmm. for 5 days. You know what I mean? The routine that I was on.
So you like to slam your chemo.
That's exactly right.
Pop it.
Listen, given the side effects or lack thereof, I would much prefer to slam my chemo.
Good.
But you remember,
glad you had that option.
Remember how I was back when I was taking the pills? I was pretty, it wasn't feeling too good. I was pretty crappy.
Yeah, you were. Yeah. You were out of sorts, Brian.
And so
I had to be the positive, cheery one, which was very difficult.
God forbid.
Yeah.
Things are.
See how I make that all about me? I'm like, yeah, I know you're under chemo.
Yeah. But think about the effect it had on me.
I had to actually care of the show for a minute there.
We wouldn't want that.
All right, this is not Chemo Beat. This is not the Chemo Vault. So let's move on.
Oscar Vault.
To Oscar Vault.
The Oscar nominees came out this
earlier this week.
And we should at least mention it. We'll get more into it later. We want to devote the time that it needs on the vaulties and such later down the road. But initial reactions, Anderson, 9 Best Picture nominees.
9, yeah.
How many have you seen?
It's a new format this year.
How many have you seen already?
They typically, at first, the beginning of the Oscars back in the 30s, they did 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to the 5 format that we all knew.
For quite some
they used to. And then they went back to 10. They're doing anything they can to get ratings because no one really tunes into that snooze fest except for geeks like us. Mm-hmm. It really is a Super Bowl of movies, so we have to pay attention to it.
Yes, absolutely.
And every year I ban it.
And I like the pomp and the circumstance.
Every year I ban it for one reason or another. This year is no different. I'm banning it. I'm not going to watch it, but I know that I will. I always go back on my word. I always give in because of something. But this year, this year is a whole new one where you have to get enough qualifying votes.
Yes, it's sort of like, you know what it is? It's the Heisman Trophy Award model, which is they'll invite as many people to New York to give out the Heisman Trophy as got a competitive number of
votes.
There's
like a watermark.
Yeah,
they have
votes.
To hit like so many votes.
Yes, a competitive number of nominations.
So this year, they got nine. Does that mean some years there will be so many shitty movies and only a couple really strong ones that we could maybe see a year where we only have two? No.
I'm guessing somewhere it's going to be 5 and 10.
I think it's always going to be between 5 and 10, yeah.
Whoa, air conditioning. Holy crap. Sorry.
Settle down.
It's chemo.
People don't feel the podcast. They just hear it. So let's settle down.
I'll bet a certain percentage of our audience just shivered.
It was a shudder more than anything.
Power
I can't
suggestion.
Believe he just did that.
The air conditioning is creeping down your spine.
No real surprises.
What?
On this list. No.
Omissions or?
I'm not seeing anything that really – it was a weak year.
Agreed. And I feel like that gets bandied around a lot, but it is in fact a weak
year. This year was weak.
Yes.
And I think that the Academy Awards reflect that for – definite sure.
How many of these nine have you seen?
Six of the nine, and I'm very disappointed to see the Tree of Life is on there because I was hoping to ban that, but now I'm going to have to see
That's
it.
That's what I tweeted that today. I'm going to have to see the Tree of Life now. Fuck.
I really didn't want to. Logan's
trying to talk me out of it.
Oh, it's awful.
Everyone
it's
I know
awful.
Is trying to talk
it's
me out
be,
of it.
Everyone – all right. That fucking movie, Thin Red Line. We'll talk about Terrence Malick a little bit later, but Thin Red Line, it's a piece of fucking shit. It's a two-hour car ad without cars. You can suck it, all right? I'm sick and tired of people. You just don't understand it, man. It's stream of consciousness, something you've never seen before. And then I say, no, it's awful. And they're like, well, then why is it up for Best Picture? Because a bunch of cunts like you voted for it.
As my wife said to me, why do you have to see it? And I'm like, in the future, we will do
here's what you tell
top five overrated
here's
Oscar
what you
nominees.
Tell so you can explain to people who like it why they shouldn't.
It's exactly
that's
right.
That's what I say.
And so I can scream. I want to be able to scream the Tree of Life sucked with impunity. And I'll be like, I heard the Tree of Life was terrible. No, I want to say it.
I don't
want
to see War Horse, the sentimental piece of shit about a horse. That's, and I'm sure it's going to die and make me cry. And I'm going to be very doubly upset with myself for A, crying, and B, crying at a Spielberg movie. It's going to be real. I'm sure there's a lot of fucking flutes and Jason Williams is overscoring.
John Williams, but still.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I disrespect him to the point.
So you did not see Tree of Life and War Horse and what else
and
did you not
see? And I definitely don't want to see Extremely Loud, Incredibly Goddamn Close.
That's not a great
can
area.
That look more sanctimonious?
And it's not supposed to be
the
good. It's getting like
– U2 goddamn song in the trailer and then it shows Sindel.
It's 44% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Right as Bono is talking about the fucking light hitting your eyes and Sindel puts the light up to his hand up to his face when the door opens. It just looks god awful.
There's a line where Sandra Bullock's like, it doesn't make sense because it doesn't. And I've heard that ad on the radio every hour while working, and it's terrible.
It haunts you, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Do you think if I watch United 93 twice and World Trade Center once, which is a piece of shit as well, that
World
will
Trade
make
Center
up
wasn't
for
– bad.
It was ungood.
It wasn't great.
It should have been called Nicolas Cage Stuck in a Crack for 2 hours of your
minus.
Life. 2 hours of your life.
B minus.
2 hours of your life. So anyways, I was really hoping that Andy Serkis would be up for an award for his portrayal of Caesar Rise of the Planet.
I was hoping Uggy the Dog would be up for Best Supporting Actor and The Artist.
I was hoping
Save.
I was hoping that Drive would get something.
I was hoping the 50-50 would get
anything.
Something.
50-50
Shut
deserves
up completely.
Something.
At least Drive got a sound editing like bone thrown to it.
Shocked that Viola Davis is up for an award in The Help. I do like The Help a lot. I'm shocked because there's no snot running out of her nose in this movie. I don't think.
Sorry.
And usually she gets nominated when that's occurring. She was great in that movie, though. And I am happy to see The Help being up for Best Picture. But Hugo, one of the most overrated fucking all-over-the-place movies I've ever seen.
I got
seen.
A lot of movies to see now. Like I say, Hugo.
Be prepared for disappointment. But you know what we do here on the Film Vault to begin with anyways is a little segment we like to call Flick Fest.
This is a perfect segue. We're going to Flick Fest the films you've seen in the last week. Can I start?
I would like to.
Oh, okay.
May I?
Because I have two topical films. You
okay, well, maybe we'll have some overlap here. Speaking of the Oscars and movies that are for Best Picture and how it's not really much of a surprise, I saw a movie that I enjoyed thoroughly, Brian.
Okay, what'd you say?
Came out this year, had a shit grin on my face the entire time. Gave me that warm, fuzzy feeling. And it was Woody Allen doing what he does best.
I was going to say, the Muppets are not nominated.
Woody Allen at his best.
Yeah.
And it was Midnight in Paris. And
Midnight Paris was good,
loved
not
it.
Great.
I thought it was a great little movie. A great little movie. A great little Woody Allen movie. If you like Woody Allen at all. Woody Allen, to me, he's like mushrooms. in that I take mushrooms and I'm like, this is the greatest feeling ever. I'm falling in love with a starfish. I can see God in this dead starfish. And I am so happy and content. I got to put mushrooms in my food. And then I won't do mushrooms again for 4 years.
Sure.
Woody Allen's that way. Like, I'm watching his movies and I'm watching this one and I'm like, I got to go back and watch this. Like, and I think this is his 41st film.
Sure.
I've seen about half of them. And I love
it. Not enough.
Most of them that I see, I love them, but not enough to, I guess, become obsessed. But his dialogue is so witty and so on mark and it's fun. Owen Wilson does a great job of playing Woody Allen, essentially, here.
I saw this, too, like a couple weeks ago. I flick-fested as well.
But I was talking to Drew.
I described it as clever. Do you agree with that?
It's clever. Very clever. And it's beautiful. I mean, every single shot is really well done. He used some new process that – because he's an older guy and he's stuck in his way, old dog. But he tried some new digital process with the color correction. Not to go too technical here, but he let a computer digitally correct
it
for the first time. Kind
it was
of
a good-looking film.
To see if he wanted to move forward. I think it's one of the best-looking movies I've seen all year as far as cinematography. It's beautiful.
Is it nominated?
I don't know. I was talking to Drew about it because Drew loves it too. And we both agree, Dr. Drew, that it's a good little movie.
It is not nominated for cinematography, if you can believe that.
A good little Woody Allen movie.
It is nominated for our direction.
Highly recommend it, but not a movie that should be up for Best Picture. But I'm like, it's going to be up for Best Picture for sure.
Yep.
And Drew said, no, you're wrong.
It's like Woody Allen's comeback film.
And then I clicked my heels and I said, I'm right.
You're right.
Look at this.
Yeah.
The Descendants, Snooze Fest.
You saw that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, I already flick fest that.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I feel like you talked about that already.
So, yeah, Midnight in Paris. I do highly recommend that. Very good little movie.
It's a clever film.
Yeah.
It's good.
Also, Son of the Movie, Brian. Son of the Movie called Paradise Lost 3.
Yeah, flick fest for me, too.
Okay, good.
Yeah, let's Paradise Lost 3. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Paradise Lost 1, The Murders at Robin Hood Hills, right? Something like that, or Robin, wherever it is. It's story, 1996 documentary about the West Memphis Three. You may be familiar with them. If you're not, they are three teens who were arrested and convicted of murdering three young boys in these woods in West Memphis,
murder
Arkansas.
Murder mutilation.
Murder mutilate. And caught up in a bunch of accusations about witchcraft. Witchcraft is a big thing, Satanism, apparently. Witchcraft.
Hey, if you have not seen Paradise Lost, the original, I think it came out in 1991 or something, 1992.
96.
96? 96, really?
Yes, I looked it up.
Wow.
Might be 94.
Okay, 96.
I think it's 96.
I think you might be right. Might be.
Okay.
But it's really, really one of my all-time favorite documentaries. It's a really, really good documentary.
All of them, their Paradise Lost, Paradise 1, 2, and 3 are all in heavy rotation right now on HBO.
And I highly recommend all of them. And it's
Sorry to finish my thought. You would maybe have heard about it, but it's most notable because a lot of celebrity types, notably amongst them Metallica, have gotten it's a cause celeb. A lot of them have gone on board and given money to the Defense Fund, and there's the West Memphis, WM3.org, and the West Memphis 3 have become very well known for their plight because other information has come out through the years as the documentaries explain that potentially I don't want to say exonerates but brings up a lot of questions.
They've been railroaded. They've been pointed as a modern day witch hunt.
Yeah.
More than anything else in the last 20 years.
At one point, one of the fathers of the victims, the young boy, is like. He's like, if it's up to me, I'd burn them just like they did in Salem.
Yeah, they got this great scene in the second one where this redneck father, a stepfather actually, who's got brain cancer as well. So that kind of once you learn that, you realize maybe that's kind of where some of the stuff's coming from, this crazy stuff. But he's got this giant, big Colt 45 gun. He's like, this one's for you, Damien Eccles. Take that one right to the gut. You know, he's fantasizing about killing these kids.
Is this the long-haired guy?
Yeah,
the crazy one who does the mock funeral?
I'm fucking losing his name right now.
One is a long mock funeral.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy's fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you think – this occurred to me while I was watching. One of the kids' name is Damien Eccles.
Yeah.
One of the accused and convicted. Do you think part of the reason that it got so caught up
because
with
of
the
name Damien?
His name Damien?
Nah.
No? I feel like the name Damien is synonymous.
Yeah, I know. But they're not – I mean, they're bad out there in West Memphis.
Right.
Arkansas, but they're not to the point where they're going to fucking convict a kid because his name's Damien.
Oh, no, not because. I'm just saying, do you think it led to the hysteria? Like, oh, he's in a Satanism, and his name's Damien.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I
think it did.
I'm sure that some people thought. But, I mean, if you've seen the first
two. This has been going on for 17 years.
Even if you haven't, they're all great. They're all very good. I love the first one. The first one stands up alone.
I like the second one better.
I don't like the second one because I don't like all the Hollywood fucks that go out there.
Oh.
Every time I think of the second one, all I can think of is that little initial meeting that all the Hollywood types, all these LA fucking left wingers that quit their jobs and they're living off mommy and daddy's money to be out in Little Rock, Arkansas.
It really has become a cause celeb. We're talking about number three now, though, by the way. Number three was set to be released in August. There was some late-breaking developments with the case, and they saw that opportunity to sort of put a more definitive end to the series. Excuse me.
Are you going to puke?
No, I can't.
What's going on?
Hiccups. This is chemo.
And they, is it really?
Yeah. Chemo in the hiccups. Series. And so they.
Chemo hiccups.
So they delayed the release and they re-edited the ending.
Name. Not a good band name. Chemo hiccups.
That's right. Or is it a great band name?
It could be terrible.
It's a punk band name. They delayed the release and released it at the Toronto International Film Festival, thereby making it eligible for the Oscars. And much to my surprise, it got nominated for Best Documentary. I was shocked.
I
was pleased. It was a very good documentary.
I would have to guess, though, that the other two, and I feel like an ass for not knowing, but the other two were not nominated. And this is not it's kind of like the
– Oh, they were TV movies. They're HBO documentaries.
They all three of them are.
But this one was technically got a theatrical release.
So essentially,
they anticipated.
It's like it's up for all three of them as one movie, and they just give it to the third one, much like they did with Lord of the Rings.
Absolutely. Yes. It's a good movie. I would not be surprised to see it win. Certainly got a lot of notoriety. And
if you have a weekend open and you've never seen any of these movies, I envy you. And you know, get some popcorn and rent all three of them.
Would you
and watch all three?
Number
of them.
One, or they're on HBO.
Yeah, TV on HBO right now. And number two, it'll be 8 hours of greatness, kind of like The Staircase, that miniseries that I recommended like a year ago.
You could, if you didn't have the time. I understand if you don't have 9 hours. You could watch number three and get the whole story.
Yeah, you could. They do
really
a lot of catch-up.
Archival footage.
They made it TV style. Like, yes. Let's assume that a lot of people never saw either one of the first.
So, if you want to see 1, 2, and 3, you'll enjoy them. If you are pressed for time and you only have 2 hours to spend, number three is good film and you'll enjoy.
Speaking of pressed for time, yeah. What do you flick class?
What about you?
We're going to end with the same.
Oh.
I would assume. Assuming that you enemy-minded.
Mine!
Right?
I'll save that for last.
Yes, let's do it.
The Artist, 2011.
Oh, you finally saw it.
Finally saw The Artist. Saw it a few days ago and directed by...
Some French dude. OSS17.
Michael has a vicious.
He's up for Best Director and he will win Best Director.
Why? You think so?
Oh, yeah.
You don't think it'll go to the sentimental choice, Woody Allen?
No.
It's throwback year for directors, by the way. Woody Allen, Martin Scorsese, and Terrence Malick.
And not Terrence Malick, but the other... The Artist, there's three movies that are up for Best Picture that are all about movie making. It's kind of like a masturbatory session. Hugo.
Is Hugo about movie making?
Yeah.
I did not realize
the only
that.
Decent part of the whole movie was all about movie making.
Wow, how about that? Yeah. Anyhow, The Artist, you flip fast this, right? Because you saw it.
Michael, should have been 40 minutes. Should have been a short. And it should have been
you think
very
so?
Art house. Yeah.
I enjoyed it very much.
All the way through.
Yes, I did.
It could have been 40 minutes shorter. I understood where they were going. I understood what they were trying to get out of it. I'm just like, all right, I get it.
In a
Let's
weak
move
year
on.
For movies, this is one of the best movies of the year. Can you say that? I mean, it's one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Yeah, also, but
not
this,
saying much.
It was a little bit overhyped. I mean, I heard from so many people how great it is. You're not going to believe this. It's so daring.
It's not Hollywood, it's not mind blowing.
Make a black
it's
and white
and it's
silent,
delightful.
Black and white and it's silent.
Yeah, no.
It's so and hearing all that, I'm like, wow. You know, I'm prepared to be blown away. I was not blown away at all.
Okay,
I feel like it should have been a short, but. Just because it was oversold to me, Dark Knight was oversold to me,
sure.
And
it
exceeded.
Yes.
Exceeded. So I mean, that doesn't kill a movie necessarily.
I loved the score. I loved the acting. I was underwhelmed by the directing. Very few images stayed with me. I can't remember any specific, you know, like one or two things.
But if you like that movie, Brian, that is 100% all the. If you cared about the characters
right.
And you follow the story, that's all the director getting. The best facial expressions and takes that he can out of his actors. So
I agree.
That is a well-directed movie, and that's why he's up. So
maybe
you're saying
then,
that you liked
then,
it, but you didn't like
then,
the direction. It's crazy.
Maybe the cinematography I'm thinking of. Whatever it was, the way the shots were framed. I know it's an old-timey sort of feel
but
to it.
But it
wasn't
very cinematic in the sense that it was like awe-inspiring with any of the shots, for sure.
Right, exactly. But I enjoyed it and admired it. I didn't find it powerful or moving. Or
I remember the
things.
Dog
kind
of more
cute
than anything else.
Dog was awesome. I'll give the dog.
Yeah, Augie.
Augie is fantastic.
Augie's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. Made for $12 million, $33 million gross so far. I assume that'll go up.
At first, as I was watching this movie, actually, I was becoming annoyed thinking about the idea of imitators coming out. But I don't think that'll happen.
It's going to be parodies.
No, parodies, yes. No. But please, let's not make another black and white silent movie next year.
I see what you're saying.
I can see the studios thinking about it going, you know what? It didn't cost much.
Didn't cost much.
We could go back.
Well, start a bunch of unknowns.
Making them like the way we used to.
Yeah.
For much cheaper. I don't think people
back
buy
the way the lead by the female lead, by the way, the director's wife. I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. Penny Lane or whatever her name was.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Penny. I don't even remember her fucking name.
No, Peppy. Peppy Miller.
Peppy Miller.
Peppy Miller.
Whatever.
It's a wonderful film.
It's a cute little movie and I could see old people liking it a lot.
Finally.
Yeah.
Enemy
here we
mine.
Go. Enemy mine.
Enemy
now.
Yours.
Really? Come on. Enemy mine. Was a movie, I don't know how it came up, but it came up.
How did it come up? Long
no
it come up.
if you remember, Logie.
I don't, but Anderson was raving about it, and so you agreed to watch it.
Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
Smart. Why did you like this movie? What do you like about this film?
Okay, now we talked. It came up somehow in the blue, as movies often do here on the film. But like,
you're
a movie will come
me,
up,
aren't you?
And,
you're fucking with me.
I'm like, oh shit, Enemy Mine. I haven't thought of that movie in a long time, and I used to refer to it all the time, reference it with the way that Drac spoke in the movie, and okay. Dennis Quaid's in it.
It was a racist film,
and I knew that it was streaming. I had seen that, I think, or maybe I looked it up on the show, and I'm like, you have not seen Enemy Mine, Brian? You gotta watch Enemy Mine.
Why?
It came out in what was it, 1985? Okay, and not the greatest year or era for movies, especially. Sci-fi movies, but I'm like,
time has not been kind.
I saw it in 1985 when I was a young child, and I remember it from my childhood. It's one of those movies that sticks with you for sure,
right?
And I even speak, like I said, like the alien.
I can see how it sticks with you if you're a child.
Flabbergasted that you had not seen it, so I'm like, you have to watch it. Unfortunately, one thing led to another, and it's been a few weeks now, so it's kind of been this running gag, not quite a Cider House Rules gag,
sure,
but to the point where I even mentioned that it's streaming to the listeners. If you want to watch it, you can hear us talk about it, Brian. I made the girl watch it with me, and I'm watching it, and the embarrassment was flowing through my body full force.
It's
like,
not a good film.
Shit. Yeah, there's so many corny, cheesy. Yeah.
This film really, the best thing you can say about it is it needs to be remade very badly.
I love it, though.
What?
I don't care. I love it.
You love it from a nostalgic standpoint.
Yes, from a nostalgic standpoint, and the fact that I thought it was so funny when it wasn't that funny. But, I mean, there are some good little special
effects.
There's
some long stretches, too, where, like, nothing happens.
All right.
There's some boring stretches.
It came up in a discussion about Wolfgang Peterson.
Yeah, Peterson.
Well, oh, yeah. So we should
Peterson. Come on.
Mention.
You got to correct him. Like you always correct
him. Yeah, sorry. Wolfgang Peterson.
Yeah.
Based on a novel by Barry Longyear. Speaking of Longyear, this fucking movie. Holy shit.
It wasn't that long.
Felt like it.
Some interesting little tidbits about Enemy Mine for those of you who watched it. I think it's – aren't you glad you saw it? You never want to see it again, but now you can refer to it.
I'm glad I've seen every movie. So in that sense, yes.
Obviously.
Even the Thin Red Line.
It was obviously a very in-your-face, what's the word I'm looking for?
Experience?
It was about racism. It was a comment on racial relations.
This is the year that Ebony and Ivory came out. You know what I mean? Like, there's a whole...
It's two separate species living on the same little asteroid or whatever who are sworn enemies, and they have to learn to live together to survive. Yep. And the author of the book, he reported a conversation, this is so great, that he had with a studio who was insisting on adding a subplot involving an actual mine that goes in the ground, thinking the audience would not realize that the mine in the title was possessive,
like
as
my
in
enemy.
My enemy. In your enemy mind.
Let me read my notes because I saw it 2 weeks ago. Desperately needs to be remade. Effects are ludicrous. Some stretches are exceedingly boring. Gossett's makeup is absurd.
No, it's good. I thought his makeup was fine.
You can see the mask stretched over his mouth.
No, you couldn't. That's how aliens' mouths are. They have one big tooth.
It was made for $29 million. It made $12 million.
Yeah, it was kind of a flop.
Kind of.
I like this movie. I will stick up for it.
$16 million.
Terry Gilliam was originally supposed to direct it. It was actually directed like more than a half of it. Some people say the entire movie was directed by somebody else before he got fired.
Richard Longcrane.
He
directed he was $9 million into production, and the studio didn't like the dailies. Basically, they said, this movie is looking pretty terrible. They fired him. Wolfie came in and moved the whole thing to fucking –
Can you imagine how terrible it must have been? But you know what? The original one that they were shooting – I don't know why we're talking so
much about
it. I want
to see the Longcrane cut.
But apparently, not only a cut, like he shot everything on location, so it was like really gritty and raw.
In space?
Brian, like outside, like with snow and actual weather and stuff. And Pedersen put everything on a soundstage. He actually used the same pond that he used for Das Boot.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know what? Everyone keeps telling me there's Das Boot. I will never say Das Boot because it's not fun to say Das Boot. Try saying Das Boot. Das Boot. But Das Boot! That is fun.
It's better.
And Lou Gossett Jr., who I'm a big,
I'm
a big fan of.
Das Boot.
Gossett Jr. He created the language from scratch. Just the language alone.
He used to have the gurgly thing in his throat. That was how he used to do it.
He used to do it when he was a kid.
Yep.
And so, anyways, I like Enemy Mine. I'm glad you watched that with me, Brian. But yes, I had a lot of embarrassment running through my veins as I was watching that, thinking, "Oh God!" Not only Brian, but some other people may have watched this. And what are they thinking of
me?
You know, like you don't like to be associated with certain things.
Yes,
like,
I don't
know if it was choice.
Oh,
but like me?
No, I don't like to associate with you.
You don't want to be associated with me, buddy? Come on.
I don't like
that. You didn't invite me to your
wedding? Like when you're the first thing people think of, and then me. Can I say that?
How do you think I feel? Dude, look at you.
You should be so lucky.
Just kidding, Mrs. Bishop. I love your son.
My mom's
I'm excited. I got we got some pretty good 1950s.
I wonder
movies
if my mom signed any of mine. Mom, don't see any of mine.
I don't even mind. She probably think it's sweet.
What?
Yeah, double entendre sweet too. Like, oh, that's sweet. It's pretty sweet. Does your mom use the word sweet? Or does she use Ella?
I've never heard her use either one of those.
Okay,
words.
Good. Good for you, Mrs. Bishop.
Yeah,
good for you.
Coming up next, the top five movies set in the 1950s.
And here's the thing: I care so much about the show and the integrity of the show and the audience and you, Brian.
Yeah.
That it was painful for me to be as honest as I am with my number one. It
Why?
Pains me.
Why?
To have it be my number one. You'll see.
Okay. Coming up next.
Brian, it's happened.
What's that?
Amazon is back on board.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they were great to us when we were doing this about a year ago, and now they've come back. They want some more, and it should be good.
Guys, let's be real for a second.
We're going to do that. We're going to break it down.
I'm actually going to be real for a second.
Are you fake?
We got a lot. No, I'm going to be genuine and real. We talk a lot about how great you guys are as fans, and when we were over at the Ace Broadcast... Yeah, listeners, participants. When we were over at Ace Broadcasting, we got a lot of attention over there because show behind, of course, the main show, in people who clicked through our Amazon link and supported the network. And you guys came through unbelievably well and supported the show. And now that Amazon's back, we're like, let's do this thing because we know that you guys are eager to support and eager to help.
They love the Film Vault and they love Amazon. So it's a marriage made in, I don't know where it's
at. Somewhere good.
Somewhere good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a marriage made in a place that is fruitful for all. So
if only there was a metaphor that worked.
I would not have brought it up. I don't know if there wasn't one. But while you're listening to this rubbish and getting entertainment value out of the actual show and hearing about movies that you should or should not watch, feel free to click through. You can see where the sniff tracks used to be.
And you guys,
it's Amazon.
You guys know the drill. It's easy. It's go to website, andersonandbrian.com. There's a big old button there. Click through on Amazon. Anytime you want to buy anything on Amazon, anytime you have anything you need, you want to watch, you want to stream, use some music, whatever you're going to do normally, you're shopping, you're normally going to do,
just
click through our link, and we get a little taste of the action, and it's a win-win situation. Thanks in advance. We appreciate it. And we will not bother you for things that you do not need. These are hopefully things you're going to get anyway. And easy way to support the show.
AndersonBryan.com.
Hi, I'm Bobcat Goldthwait, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonBryan.com.
Sounds like your theme music, Brent. I can see them playing this whenever you walk in a room.
This is not bad.
Not this part, the earlier part.
The earlier part, the bouncy part. The background talking chatter you heard was not us. It was, in fact, the wind. The wind! That's the featured artist of the week. Thank you, the wind, for being our featured artist.
That sounds like Of Montreal.
No, they're the wind. They're from Long Beach, California.
I love Of Montreal, and it's a compliment.
First disc available for free at thewind.us. Check them out, thewind.us. Thanks, The Wind.
Of Montreal sounds like the Beatles, so it's
this is Beatlesque.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is a little bit of like a Rubber Soul era Beatles.
1950s.
Yeah, 1950s. Top five films set in the 50s. Anderson?
You ever been in the 50s, Brian?
I have not. My parents are barely in the 50s.
50s Cafe, good place to hang out.
Cafe 50s.
Yeah. 50s
Great Cafe. Milkshakes.
50s Cafe.
What's the difference?
I think there's two or three different ones that they all kind of break each other off. And we're called the 50s Cafe, not the Cafe 50s, so you can fuck off. How about that?
There's a place in L.A. called Cafe 50s on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Let's not get too...
Fucking great milkshakes.
The one I go to is on Lincoln. Run by all Asians.
It's the same one. Same one, but
run
it has...
Run by all Asians.
Really?
Yeah, cash only.
Same one, but smaller menu. I went there once wanting my favorite shake. They didn't have it on the menu.
Really?
Yeah.
What's your favorite shake?
The Elvis shake. Peanut butter, banana.
And virgin Hyman's.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Wow, you guessed that. No problem. I'm surprised.
Let's go.
How many of your films take place entirely within the 1950s?
All.
Really?
Absolutely every single one. You got to, right? Wasn't that part of the criteria? I thought that was part of the criteria.
Well,
take place in the 50s.
I think we'll come up with, I think we'll hear some listener suggestions of movies that the listener top five may include some films that don't take place 100% within the 1950s.
I have a feeling like Godfather 2 is probably going to come. A lot of it takes place in the 50s.
Yes. That's my question. How many of your films are
I went for World War II movies all take place in the 50s, but they don't have that 50s nostalgia. World War II movies?
World War II took place in the 40s. Korean
War movies, which there's a plenty of them. And I looked at them and I said, no. But you don't think of 1950s when you're watching a war movie. So if it's primarily a war movie, if it's primarily a sports movie, right. Kind of, you know, but we're going to probably have at least one, maybe two crossovers, Brian. But movies like I've never been to the 50s, obviously. Yeah, but these.
What made you think of this topic? Because I've never in my life thought
worry
myself.
About you.
What?
Concerned.
Yeah, but you didn't answer the question.
I did. I said that it came from me watching a movie that we talk about next week, so I can't spoil. Probably, I think my number one.
Oh, you're
one,
right. I'm sorry. I ignored that part.
Don't worry about you, Brad.
Skino.
Mouse is dead.
Mouse died.
Mouse died. I don't like inside jokes.
Sorry.
We should stop doing that.
Top five movies set in the 50s. Should I go first? Because four of my five films take place entirely within the decade. My number five film, while I love it, and I think it's a really good movie, Kinsey from 2004. Takes place between the years 1948 and 1956. The majority of the action takes place in the 50s because he'd already become famous by the time the movie's events more or less take place.
The word is action that you go with?
It's actually inappropriate. You're right. That's not it's about sex.
Maybe one of the slowest movies I've ever seen.
There's a lot of talking. It's very academic. A lot of academia going on here. Kinsey, 2004, directed, written by Bill Condon, who did Dreamgirls and wrote Chicago.
Before you worked on Loveline, after, during?
Why towards the end?
Because I kind of blame me. I feel like I should have liked this movie more than I did. Right. But I think that all the goddamn sex talk. I'm to the point with Loveline. I've been working on it for so goddamn long. 2 hours a night. I hear filth. That I go to like bars afterwards. Sometimes it'll be like attractive girls sitting by me,
right,
talking about sex, which is usually a green light. I know that I'm engaged now, but she doesn't listen, so it's okay.
It's good.
And usually that's like green light. Drunken girl
it's
talking about sex openly.
Yeah.
I move tables. I'm so sick of hearing about people talk about sex.
Yep.
In this movie, that's all it is.
She's talking about sex. She wants to talk about movies. You're like, yeah, but Kubrick, come on. Haven't you seen The Killing?
Have you yet?
No, I have not yet.
Oh, we got to start gambling.
Sorry, buddy.
When we start gambling,
yep.
You know, the whole thing with the gambling. Can we get that?
We'll gamble on the show. Oh, yeah, we can tease that.
We're going to gamble.
We're going to gamble on the show.
The way it's going to work is there's going to be a line set. We don't know who's going to set the line. I think it's going to be –
we'll get into the details later. Tell about the stakes.
So somebody's going to win or lose. Right. And the stakes are if Brian loses, he has to watch a movie that I pick for him.
Yes. And if you lose, you will have to watch a film that I signed for.
Right. And here's what sucks for me is Brian's going to have me watch terrible, awful movies.
No.
For comedic effect, I would think. And I'm going to have him watch awesome movies that I love that he's not seen, like Enemy Mine. Enemy Mine 2.
Oh, no. Enemy Hours.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. Kinsey, 2004. Yes, Liam Neeson, Laura Linney, young Peter Sarsgaard. And Chris O'Donnell, where have you been? John Lithgow, fantastic. And I don't know if you call it a cameo. He's only in one scene. But is the one thing I remember clearly about this film is William Sadler towards the end. Bill Sadler has an intense cameo, an intense scene that I think he's one of the few guys that can play it effectively. He's so creepy yet compelling, yet it's perfect of that it's perfect for that era and for his character. But Kinsey, based on the real-life story of Alfred Kinsey, he's a professor at Indiana University, wrote some groundbreaking – the reason Anderson brought up sex. He wrote some groundbreaking studies and books on human sexual behavior. And it was extraordinarily controversial in the 1950s. And this movie deals with the controversy in his life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, a lot of gay stuff in here too. And yeah.
Very clinical, very sterile.
Yes, it was. Very clinical, very sterile. And turn your way
from – dull.
And no, not dull. The movie's, you know what? It's a good movie.
You know what wasn't dull, Brian? Pandorum was a movie that I was going to bring up in reference to Enemy Mine. I know I'm a little bit all over the place, but what else is new?
It was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, by the way.
What else is new, Brian? But people, I don't know if you were getting the same tweets. They were saying, hey, you like Enemy Mine, you should watch the sequel, Pandorum. I did a lot of research.
Is Pandorum a sequel?
Not a sequel. Not a sequel to Enemy Mine. But there are some similarities, such as Dennis Quaid is in both. But Pandorum,
I've never heard that.
Piqued my interest, though, and I added it to the queue. Pandorum.
Kinsey, by the way.
It's pretty terrible.
Pandorum, coming to a flick fashion near you.
Pandorum's pretty terrible?
Maybe Pandorum kind of sucks.
Pandorum
is it out
sucks.
Already?
Yeah, it's on instant stream.
2009, I think.
Wait, what's – I'm thinking of Prometheus. I'm sorry.
I apologize for this derailment that I have caused.
The Ridley Scott film Prometheus has come out.
Oh, no, that has not come out yet.
Yeah,
that looks –
that?
That looks awesome. My God, that looks awesome.
Kinsey, by the way, to wrap it up, nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Oscar.
Alien. Okay, well, I'm done with Kinsey. I will fuck Kinsey.
She lost to Kate. Well, he would let you.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Gay. I understand that. Yeah. How much do you think motivated his studies was like? You know, it's like he's just one of those guys that just takes what he wants. He's like, I'm really into sex and I'm a little bit gay and it's not really allowed. So let's study it.
Get that drop.
If I study it.
Get that drop.
Then maybe I could do a little gay sex watching at least.
Number five for you.
And it'd be clinical, you Number see. Five clinical. You. Is that how Kinsey talked? He didn't talk about it. Liam Neeson has a boring face. My number five movie that is not boring, Brian.
Mm.
Shot almost entirely in vignettes, which is very daring. And I appreciate that. I like the vignette storytelling. You know, where everything's not building. I've taken so many writing classes and workshops and whatnot, and I'm so tired of hearing these fucking guys saying every single scene. And your USC professors would, like, kill me if they even heard me saying this public. Every single action, every single scene has to be giving back to the story and helping build to the and I like vignettes. David Lynch makes fucking amazing vignettes that don't really necessarily tie into everything else, don't propel the motion forward of the movie, but they're great and they stand out and they're memorable for me.
I took a few screenwriting classes at USC because it's sort of a hobby of mine, a passion. And I will say that the who's the fucking guy who wrote the famous books on screenwriting?
Sid Field.
The Sid Field mold of screenwriting, which you were talking about, everything must feed the action, blah, blah, blah. That, I feel like by the time the 90s came around and like Quentin Tarantino was on top with like, you know, Pulp Fiction, I feel like a lot of the rules are being broken and a lot of the rule breaking was being emphasized. So I think that, at least in my experience, professors were really getting away from that, saying like, hey, you can do this weird stuff and it can work as long as you – you know, have the basic elements of screenwriting, you know, the three act structure, and, you know, still, they're still there.
I apologize for the second derailment. I take full responsibility. I own that. Diner, 1982. I apologize.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ. Barry Levinson's first feature debut. He was nominated for an award for best screenplay for this movie, based entirely on different parts of his own childhood and growing up. So none of the characters are based directly on him, but they are all somewhat about him.
Yes.
And it all takes place in 1959, Baltimore. A group of friends are back in town, Brian.
Christmas time.
Because Steve Guttenberg's character is getting married. Or is he? Because his little wifey's got to take a little football test.
He decides in order to be married to him, she must pass a test of his administering on football, on the Baltimore Colts.
Great, great cast. This is actually,
is the whole film about – is the test about football or is it about the Colts
all,
specifically?
All football.
But is it all about
no,
Colts?
No, there's some really like tough questions that have to do with like expansion teams and teams that went extinct. And great, great cast. This actually might have come up – Mike may come up again, at least as an also-ran with a future episode where we do top and ensemble casts, Brian. But listen, Steve Guttenberg at the height of his Guttenbergness.
Yes, he was good, handsome,
funny, charismatic guy.
He played kind of a meathead.
Most of us just remember him as you know, the Police Academy
guy,
and he kind of killed his career with that. I think you might have seen The Day After, too, that I talked about a couple weeks ago, that 1980s Cold War new post-apocalyptic movie. He was fucking great in that. So,
yeah, Guttenberg was as good as it got.
Daniel Stern, he played the one married friend in town. Mickey Rourke.
Married Ellen Barkin, by the way.
Yes, she was. He was. And she says she was quoted as saying that it was the most realistic character she had ever played, or she felt more real playing that character than ever. Mickey Rourke,
never better.
Boogie. He played Boogie.
Never
Kevin
better.
Bacon, never better. Creepy. Weird. Strange. You don't even see a whole lot of
fantastic.
Kevin Bacon in
he is
him.
Fantastic.
You don't see a whole lot of Kevin Bacon. It opens up with him breaking windows and being drunk. He's half drunk through the entire movie.
Divergent.
Great, great Kevin Bacon.
Would you say Kevin Bacon is an extraordinarily underrated actor?
Yes.
I would say he is.
One of those guys like where you hear his name and you think Tremors, Footloose, but he's far beyond.
By the way, great in Tremors.
He's great in Murder on the First. God, I love that movie.
There's that one.
Action. Yeah. Reaction. Go see Murder on the
First. He's great in River Wild.
Much, much better than Enemy Mine. Will you see if Murder on the First is streaming?
I think it is.
Let's
actually,
do this again.
It's on my streaming queue, I think.
Oh, must watch.
Because you've talked about it before.
Must watch. So good.
Anyway, he's great. He is great in this. And this might be – this is one of his – no, he was around before.
Paul Reiser's in the movie as well. He wasn't even supposed to be in it. He went and he was with his friend for an audition, and they liked him so much. They saw him in the hanging out room, in the waiting room. They're like, come back. Do an audition. So he did.
Timothy Daly is the lead.
All the scenes that were filmed in the diner were the last, so that the cast and mainly the cast, they all knew each other really well, so they were hanging out in the diner. And there's a lot of ad-libbing going on. You feel – when you're watching the movie, it's like there's not a whole lot going on, but you're in that fucking world. And by the time the movie ends, you feel like you just spent an afternoon at least, or maybe even longer in
– Carol Heathrow.
1959.
She's death.
In Baltimore.
Podcast listeners who enjoy conversation would love Diner. just because of all the interactions inside the diner, it's like listening to a podcast.
And a lot of those, yeah, because it's shot in vignettes where he's just kind of
you're like eavesdropping.
Actual
you're like eavesdropping on some friends,
which it just felt like Logan was doing with the show. Like, yeah, I forgot that he was here. It's like, who's
podcast listeners?
What's going on?
Yeah, it's a great movie.
The film, I don't know if you know this, but it inspired a 1983 CBS television pilot.
Yes,
it did. Written and directed by Levinson. Michael Madsen took over the hot character as Boogie, and James Spader was Fenwick, which is Kevin Bacon's character. I would like to see that.
I wonder if I can dig that up somewhere.
And Brian, check this out. A stage and musical is coming.
Would you say diner?
What? No, listen to me. I'm in the middle of something here.
Okay, sorry.
This fall. It's going to be it's going to be a musical on Broadway.
No shit.
Before that, it's going to be traveling around as like a little tryout.
That's awesome.
See how it is in July this summer?
Let's go see it together.
Hand in hand.
Yeah,
we can skip there. What do you say?
A musical, really? I guess the 50s music is pretty prevalent in the film. The music is fantastic in the film. The characters are great. And would you say, off the top of my head, I own this movie, by the way, so I love it. Would you say that it would be tough for people to watch nowadays who haven't seen it? Like, it moves slow by today's standards.
It might be, but there's so many recognizable faces and big actors in it.
Right.
I think that just seeing them from, you know, what is it, almost, you know, 25, 30 years ago now, I think that would be interesting enough. If you're listening to the show, you have the patience to sit and listen to a podcast or while you're doing other things and you like movies a lot, I would say that 60 to 80% of people listening to this would enjoy Diner, appreciate Diner.
The pacing's a little bit slow, but
it is definitely slow, but
there's enough there to hold your attention.
It's an investment because you kind of need that slow pacing to really get into the – much like Deadwood. Like, I would watch Deadwood 3 or 4 episodes at a time. Oh, better example, Boardwalk Empire.
Okay.
And I'll watch like 2-3 episodes at a time. I don't really like the first half of the first one ever because it takes me a while to get into that era.
You have to adjust your internal metronome.
It's so rich with what's going on at that time. And once you invest a little bit of time, and this movie is a couple hours long, I think.
I understand that.
I just watched it for the first time last month, and I can say that Diner does hold up.
Oh, wow.
Nice. And you watched it for class?
No, I just watched it because I wanted to see it.
That's good flick.
And
one of Corolla's favorites, by the way.
What are Corolla's favorites?
One of Corolla's favorites.
He likes that Brian song. Logan can't get through Raising Arizona, so I say that that's a good
I never
song.
Said that. Yeah, I like Raising Arizona.
You said it was slow and it took you like more than a week to get through.
That was me.
No, that was not me.
I swear to God it was you.
That was not me. I like Raising Arizona.
Logan.
I swear to God I remember it well as the ace, and everyone was giving me shit
that
in the room
Katie.
For calling me a hipster for liking Raising Arizona, and then you chimed in. You're like, yeah, I tried to watch it. Took me a couple seatings through it.
The beginning, it took me a while to get going with it because I had my mind on other things, but once I actually sat down and watched the whole thing, I liked it.
Well, you're not helping my cause because everyone thinks you're a hipster as well, but I remember him saying that.
So. Number 4 for me.
Jesus Christ, this episode.
A film I wanted to leave off only because it seems so obvious. It was the first movie I think that came to mind. Mm-hmm. And not one of my favorite films, but I do like this film a lot and couldn't leave it off. It was just that good. Mm-hmm. L.A. Confidential from 1997, written and directed by Curtis Hanson, who went on to direct 8 Mile and also did The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. A fantastic cast. Unknowns at the time, Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce, relative unknowns, at least in America. And, of course, Kevin Spacey. James Cromwell, who's fantastic. Kim Basinger in an Oscar-nominated role based on the James Ellroy novel. Anderson, you applauding my selection?
No, I was doing the sounds that Eminem and what's-her-name made in between the trains and 8 Mile.
Oh, Brittany Murphy,
which I realized is inappropriate because I forgot that she had passed
on. She's no longer with us.
But that was like – remember there's no music or anything? It was just the
– it was pretty intense. And a train passing by.
Yeah, trains.
There was a Chris Hansen, the director, in order to get the feel of the film. He put together slideshows. Slideshows of like vintage postcards from like the 1950s in Los Angeles because that's sort of a bygone era. Obviously, L.A. is much, much different these days. But it was sort of looked at as a paradise out there on the coast, and a place to get away.
Scratch beneath the surface,
the glitter and the glam and all that stuff. So he put together a presentation of 15 postcards and he gave them to the studio. So this is how the film's going to look. He held a mini film festival for the cast and crew. Anderson, 1950s movie, sort of film a day.
Wow,
to get people into the mood.
Wow, that's pretty good.
None of which I've ever seen. I looked at the list. And I was like, I don't know those movies.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of like with Shawshank. Darabont was watching. What was he watching? He was watching some movie every single
day. Wasn't it Rita Hayworth movie?
Oh no! What the? I just talked about it last week. I think.
Oh really? Ago.
Ah, Christ Almighty! He was watching. He watched a movie every single day, and to put himself in the mood for directing Shawshank. Anyways, I apologize.
What's his face? Russell Crowe. He studied Kubrick's The Killing, speaking of which, quote, for that beefy manliness that came out of World War II.
Yeah.
That was his inspiration for the era.
There was a lot of beefy manliness, especially with the fight scene.
It won Best Actress and Best Adapted Screenplay Oscars, also nominated for 7 more, including Best Picture and Best Director, was set in 1953.
You think if LA Confidential came out this year, because it is somewhat timeless. I mean, if it came out this year, people want to say it looks dated because it's a period piece. Do you think it would win Best Picture?
It would definitely be nominated.
It would definitely be nominated. I think it might win.
I would have a chance.
People love that movie.
I haven't seen The Tree of Life.
I don't know. All right, we're both going to play Fast Set in a couple weeks.
Oh, fuck. I feel like I have to. I may live tweet from the film. I don't know what to do to keep myself entertained.
My number four. 1994. Yeah. It was a bomb. Yeah. Bomb at the box office. Okay. Takes place, though, December of 1958, and it is one of my all-time favorites, except for the end, Brian. I'm not a giant fan of the end.
Okay.
This is a movie that was written by the Coens, directed by the Coens, written by the Coens, and Sam Raimi. Hudsucker Proxy. I love the Hudsucker Proxy.
Tim Robbins.
It is a feast for the eyes. It is Coen Brothers cinema at its finest. I mean, when they're inside the bowels of the actual mailroom and all the goings on and the pacing and the blocking and all the language going on. And
is Paul Newman
Jennifer Jason Leigh and Paul Newman doing
his
thing.
Confession?
And, I'm envious. I would like to go back. Now, that being said, the end is a huge letdown and it's kind of ridiculous and it doesn't really fit the rest of the movie. It's kind of fucking weird.
Does this belong in your top 5 worst endings? Good movie with bad endings?
I don't know. I think some people might argue with me on the ending being terrible. I think I might be kind of in the minority of hating the ending, but it didn't fit the rest of the movie. But the pacing is so great. Tim Robbins at his best. Joel Silver directed this movie. It was the first and I think only time that he worked with the Coens. They did not see eye to eye on a whole lot of things, Brian. He wanted the part of Norville Barnes, who was played by Tim Robbins, to be played by Tom Cruise. That's real inspirational and real stretch there. Joel wanted to make some money. He probably would have been right, though, because the movie bombed, like I said.
Sure.
Cost $40 million. It was the highest budgeted movie for the Coens to date at the time in 1994. And they really wanted it to succeed, and it failed. I think it made $2 million, just under $3 million.
It was terrible.
Tim Robbins at his best, though. It was at the height of Tim Robbins-ness. Jennifer Jason Leigh as Amy Archer. She was great. She played like a news reporter who was like real tough as nails. And she was always getting in there, getting a scoop, see? Paul Newman as Sidney J. Musburger. And the Coens first actually offered that role to Clint Eastwood. He played the big boss. So Clint Eastwood would have been perfect. I can't imagine it because I love the movie and I've seen it like 3 or 4 times. But going back and seeing Paul Newman, I love Paul Newman and it's so sad that he's gone. But this is one of his more fun roles. And he had a good time with it, you could tell. Sam Raimi actually has a little he's one of the Hudsucker brainstormers and he has a little cameo in it, uncredited. But what it is, it's a lot like Forrest Gump in the sense. Have you seen this, Logan?
No, I haven't.
I wonder how many times that happens per episode.
Made $2 million.
I'm in the middle of something. I'm like, hey, Logan, can you help me out with this? All right.
No one's seen
it. It's similar to Forrest Gump in that fate does not seem to like mind his mental delayed situation.
Sure.
He plays a very upbeat.
Mental delayed situation.
Mentally delayed guy. I mean, he's not very smart, but he's always in the right place at the right time.
Sure.
Ultimately, Hudsucker is the name of the company that he works for. And it's giant corporate American company in the 50s. And he becomes the proxy. He becomes the guy in charge by inventing the hula hoop, Brian. And his whole entire idea is just a circle. And he shows it to people and his whole pitch is, you know, for kids. And with that, ultimately, he becomes head of the entire company and he's in charge. And it is wacky. It is Coen Brothers at their best at times. And at the end, like I said, at the worst. But it's definitely 50s and has that vibe, the 50s vibe.
Nice.
Hudsucker Proxy. Not available on Instant.
Oh.
Let me check Amazon.
I was about to watch this. Oh, yeah. Check it out. I can watch this for free. I'll see it.
Logan, that's your new thing. You can check out see if Diner or Hudsucker is available on Amazon.
Like, Diner is on Netflix. Yeah, I haven't checked Amazon yet. But
it's not on streaming. It's
on. Hudsucker Proxy is not available on Netflix.
Did you not just say that?
That's why I slammed my fist.
Coming up next.
Really?
Yeah, you know why? Because you're going to have to get up and turn off that air conditioning. It's killing me.
But we have 6 more goddamn movies.
The chemotherapy that's coursing through my veins makes my skin sensitive. Thanks, buddy. Coming up next, conclusion, top 5 movies set in the 50s. Hey, podcast listener. While you're sitting there listening to podcasts, check out AndersonandBryan.com.
Brian with a Y.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the show, Brian, other than seeing your lovely face every single week and working with Logan, is really interacting with the listeners. I love it. And a lot of great stuff goes on over at AndersonandBrian.com.
Yeah, leave comments on the site. Check out a list of every film mentioned in every episode, which, by the way, is quite a comprehensive list.
Yeah, we should have a ding every time we talk about a new movie.
Absolutely
not. On the show. Yeah, I think we should.
Check it out, AndersonandBrian.com. Mm-hmm. Check it out. Sucker.
Two.
Thanks, The Wind. Feature artist this week, thewind.us. Check them out, The Wind. Also, you can check out all the information on AndersonandBrian.com for all of your film vault needs.
we gotta get some needs.
Needs. Me first?
Yeah.
Me first. Number three. Oh, I fucking love this movie so much. Well, I don't even know. I should have looked. Was it all my top five sports movies ever? Should've Hoosiers. Been. Mm-hmm. Set in 1952.
Sports movie.
From 1986, David Anspaugh, the director. He also directed Rudy, Far Inferior. Far, far, far inferior.
Movie about sports. You're saying that because it's Notre Dame.
About Notre Dame. That's right.
You're saying that because it's Notre Dame.
I tweeted, I was researching this film and think about how fucking great Gene Hackman was, and I just thought, man, I miss Gene Hackman.
Yeah, I miss him too. Come back, Gene.
I really wish he'd come back.
Come back.
There's so many great roles out there.
Do you think
for
he has some
people.
Kind of deformity?
He just got hit by a car last week.
Really?
He was on a bike.
What?
Some guy in Florida ran him over.
Of course. What are you doing? What, Gene? You're
probably in retirement.
Wait a minute. You're retired and you're in Florida and you have money? What are you doing?
I think he's in the Keys. He lives in the
That'd be
Keys
awesome. Like that. God, what a life. I want to go down there and live with Gene Hackman.
Hey, Logan found out during the break that Hudsucker Proxy is available on Amazon for what? $199?
$299.
$299? I'd say worth it. No, don't. I'd say worth it. But I'd say.
Better or worse than I'm in mine.
Yeah. I mean, if you're paying a dollar an act, it's worth the $2 for the first two acts.
Yeah. Anyway, Hoosiers also starring Barbara Hershey, Dennis Hopper, who was nominated for an Oscar, Best Supporting Actor, not Oscar, also Best Score, which, by the way, the score is ridiculous. The score does not hold up. we've had this conversation many times. But it's based loosely on Milan High School, who won the 1954 Indiana State Championship in basketball. And in 1952, the fictional Hoosiers of Hickory High. Actually, I don't know if they were the Hoosiers, but Hickory High School. Jimmy Chitwood and Hickory High basketball team won the state championship. Oh, spoiler alert. They won the state championship.
Come on, Brian.
Sorry, buddy. They actually, because due to budget constraints, they had set the film in New Richmond, Indiana, which is a tiny little town in Indiana. And because of budget constraints, they had to actually hire a lot of locals for principal roles, like guys on the team and stuff, because they couldn't afford to bring in like actors for however many weeks they were out there.
You know why I didn't like this movie?
Hmm?
Racist.
Yes.
Yeah, so? Black people.
And?
No black people.
It's a great racist movie.
It's hard for me to watch white people playing basketball.
The American Film Institute named it the number 13 most inspirational film of all time, the number 4 sports film of all time. Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've heard this from your lips.
Yes, you have.
At
Dennis
least
Hopper.
10 times.
Here's something new. Dennis Hopper lost his Best Actor nomination. He lost the award to Michael Caine, who won it for Woody Allen's Hannah and Her Sisters.
Hannah and Those Sisters. That's a good movie.
That's right.
A good little
number
movie.
Number 3, Hoosiers.
I thought you said number 3, Who Is Yours? And I was going to be like, hey, good segue.
Who's yours, number 3?
Yeah. I got a couple drops for this one. I'm excited about this one. This is one of my all-time
favorite is this.
Hey, what? Settle down. Everyone calm. Everyone slow the fuck down. This Boy's Life.
Yeah.
Oh, I love This Boy's Life.
Is this
life.
One like not available on Netflix or something? Like this is extraordinarily hard to find, right?
I don't think so. Check out. Just see if it's on Amazon. I'm going to check out. No, I it's available on Netflix to rent through the mail, but you can't watch it.
Okay.
But 1993 takes place in 1995. It is the memoir of Tobias Wolff, who is he's an author, and he's mostly known for This Boy's Life, which is – it was published in 1989, and it is a horrific story of his upbringing by his stepfather, played by one Robert De Niro. He plays Dwight Hansen, and he's Tobias or Jack's stepfather. He renames himself Jack because he loves Jack London so much.
Young Leo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio plays Tobias Wolff or Jack Wolff. And it was originally supposed to be Tobias. I mean, not Tobias. I'm sorry. It was originally supposed to be Tobey Maguire's first big movie.
Speaking of Tobias.
It was actually who was his movie debut because he was like one of his friends. But it takes place in the 50s, 1955, like I said, up in Concrete, Washington. And I saw a lot of similarities between my childhood and Tobias Wolff's childhood. I think that might be one of the reasons why I love this movie so much. It was when I was obsessed with Robert De Niro, the early 90s. I saw everything that he did. up until that point, and every single movie that came out that was new with De Niro, I watched numerous times in the theater, and I loved his character in this movie. He played a hard ass, a verbally, physically abusive father.
Yes, you have a couple great drops from this film.
Will you please play Logan? I have it on the hotkey number one. A lot of people listening to Love, who've listened to Loveline, will recognize this drop.
Liar, liar, whore, liar, whore, and you know it.
That's talking. He's talking to Tobias's mom, his new wife there. And play number two if you would to. Please don't.
I'm so scared. Oh!
He's just a sad little pathetic man who's trying to beat the laziness out of Tobias Wolf. And hilarious. Some of the lines that.
Please find out if this is on Netflix, because I remember
looking for it.
I remember looking for it, and like it was like to have the green save button.
Nah,
like
that's
they don't
gone.
Have the disc.
It's gone. I looked it up today.
$2.99 on Amazon. Rent it to stream.
And right. you can get it from Netflix. Who doesn't know this show exists, apparently.
Wow.
Chris Cooper's also in it, plays Roy. Eliza Dushku is in it.
Her is Dushku.
I don't care. It's
Push.
I don't care. Jonah Bletchman as Arthur Gale, his homosexual classmate that Toby's friends with.
Homo.
And Tim Bryan. Here are some of the great lines. The movie, it's a really well done movie. It holds up as a movie on its own, but Dwight's character is reminiscent of Dwight Yoakam's character actually in Sling Blade with his evilness. He's not like a drunkard evil guy. He's just like a German Nazi type.
Taskmaster.
Angry taskmaster, but a childish in his ways too. Here's some of his lines. A total bully. I know a thing or two about a thing or two. And he says, the night that he gets married to Ellen Barkin, his wife.
The night that they get married.
Yes, also in Diner. We mentioned her name earlier. They go home to have sex, to
consummate
their relations. And he immediately flips her over. And he says, I don't like the face. No, I don't like the face. You can get a doggy style. You can get it laying on your side. Those are your only two choices. This is my house. And I get to say, got it? He didn't like the face. He didn't like to look at the face while having sex.
Wow.
She found that out the night that they got married.
No kidding, no one intended.
Some great scenes where like he takes her to the turkey shoot, and she shoots better than he does. And it's a bit of a spoiler, but she shoots a little bit better than he does, and he's just beside himself with rage and anger. And just De Niro, definitely one of my top five De Niro performances ever. And for those of you who might be a little bit younger and you didn't realize, just you hear about all the big ones like Raging Bull and Goodfellas and Mean mm-hmm. Streets even. This is kind of one of the ones that got away, and I love him in this movie.
Okay. Fuck, I will see this film.
What about me? Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
This boy's life.
Number two for me.
I don't like the face. I know a thing or two about a thing or two.
Imagine her disappointment.
She's like, really? This is the guy? And that happens so often. I mean, I saw it a little bit in my own childhood, but, you know, where guys and women.
You saw your parents do a doggy style?
No, but they pretend to be somebody else until it's like marriage time. And I was like, all right, I got you now. Here's the real me.
This is who I am.
Yeah.
I put up a facade just long enough to get you get that ring on your finger.
Yeah.
Number two. Mm-hmm. Can I go?
I would like it if you did. I'd enjoy that.
Directed by Robert Redford.
Mm-hmm.
Quiz show.
Hey.
Set in the late 1950s, the events take place between 1956 and 1959 with Marty Scorsese. Small role.
No, I was saying Marty because that was the name of the movie in Quiz Show.
Yes, the movie Marty is a plot point in the film.
Big,
Marty
giant.
Scorsese, by the way, is also a role in the film as an actor. Starring Ralph Fiennes as Charles Van Doren, the real-life Charles Van Doren, who was involved in the Quiz Show scandals. When I was on Millionaire, they actually referenced this, like in backstage, the producers are like, they told us the rules and went over and over it, and they were very exacting about what we could and could not talk to people about, including like crew members, like don't talk to anybody. It's like, if you guys saw Quiz Show, this is all about the Quiz Show scandals, and that's why we can't have you guys talking to anybody or any impropriety, any sense of impropriety.
When did that happen?
When I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
I stopped listening to you.
Sorry.
Like 10 minutes ago.
When I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
You were on that show?
I was on that show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did okay, right?
I don't remember.
You did all right for your buddy.
I was radiated.
Did all right for yourself?
Yeah.
100 G's?
Also starring Rob Moore.
How much did they let you keep of that 100 G's? How much did they let you keep?
I think
I
paid.
You don't like to talk about
this?
Yeah. Can I not talk about this?
$20,000 in taxes, maybe?
Make you uncomfortable?
Probably $20,000 I paid.
$20,000. I remember I watched and I cheered you on.
Thanks,
buddy. I told you that I was cheering against you at the time, but I cheered you on.
You know what happens is they tax you like it's income. That's the game show winnings are taxed as income.
Should be.
Yeah, so right. It's
gotta
not
keep this country running.
Yeah, but there's no like winnings. There's no like prize money. There's no
gifts. Well, they tax gifts.
That's not a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they tax gifts.
What did you enjoy more? I know that you got more money for winning the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I thought you were kind of a pussy. You should have answered that next question.
Okay, you think I should have gone for it?
Yeah, you definitely should have gone for it. $100,000 can't really change your life.
That's
right?
True. Yeah,
but I have a house now. What did you enjoy more? Obviously, the monetary gain with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was superior, but satisfaction wise of winning, just pure winning.
Oh, wow. Up.
Beat the Geeks or Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Oh, I thought you were going to
enjoy beating Geeks.
Oh, the Geeks thing was retarded.
What? Don't use the word.
Sorry. Sorry, buddy. But I thought you were going to say, actually, an interesting question, questioning my psyche. Mm-hmm. Was I more appreciative of the money that I won or of the experience of saying that, hey, I went on a game show and I won? You know what I mean? Like,
no, I wasn't getting that philosophical.
Oh, because that's an interesting question. I never thought about that.
Oh, that's very – was it the pride of actually being smart or the monetary
gain?
Yeah,
I never thought about that.
I don't give a fuck about that. Okay. Beating the Geeks. You were the number one geek.
I guess I was.
Did you feel good about that?
That was not a good show.
You beat people. I thought it was a good show. I enjoyed that
show. Stupid
show. Beat the Geeks.
It was not a good show. Okay. Ran for 2 years and made many changes. Sorry to catch all the listeners up. I was on a Comedy Central game show in like 2000. It was literally September 12th, 2001. It was the day after 9/11. It was unbelievable.
Go back and watch Brian's face in Glee and just see what kind of a person he is.
I don't think it's on YouTube,
see
actually.
Speaking of Brian's face,
Brian's big fat face.
He's like, let's just win some money.
That was me in full like fat effect. Like I was as fat as it got.
All the other contestants were still puffy-eyed from crying and, you know. Destroyed by the events.
I was so locked in. I didn't even know what had happened.
Actually, you know what? That's probably why you won. The Geeks were not focused.
That's exactly why
they were waiting for the next.
They were traumatized. Yeah. They were thinking about all the terrible things that happened.
Evildoers.
Me, I was locked in. Mm-hmm. Quiz Show, 1994, directed by Robert Redford, and nominated, by the way, for holy crap, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor for Paul Schofield. He lost to Martin Landau and Ed Wood. And Best Screenplay, a rare 100% amongst Rotten Tomato top critics.
Weird.
Yeah, because there's a lot of movies out there that are great, great movies and don't have 100%. But this one does. It the compelling portrayals of Charles Van Dorn and Herbert Stempel, played by John Turturro, who's fantastic.
This is one of those movies that I liked a lot and I enjoyed it when I saw it, but I had no interest in ever watching it again.
Really?
It came on my list like last week or whatever it was. Yeah.
I've seen this movie a few times.
There's really
no
heart. I don't really care about Turturro's character too much. It kind of seemed like a narc to me or I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there's no character that I really cared enough for to care about their fate.
There's so many characters in here. 90% of the characters are victims. There's a few guys who are sort of running the whole thing, but like it's like a bomb goes off and everyone's dead in a sense because a whole bunch of people are hurt by the events in the film. And it's a real life story, by the way. But
yeah, it felt more like an actual account. Like this is what happened. This is how it happened. And we're going to show it to you accurately as it happens, not like a story that I care about.
But I do love the depiction of the 1950s. Like I said, set in the late 50s and sort of it's a – I think he's at Harvard or Columbia. He's at an Ivy League school teaching along with his father, Charles Van Dorn is. And he's a I love the depiction of the colleges in the 50s. It's very romantic. It's a romantic notion.
All the Ivy League schoolers?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
My number.
All right, anyhow, number two.
My number two. My two top two have a couple
recap,
things in
recap,
common.
Recap.
My number three, going back 5-1. Go ahead, Brian.
5-1 for me. I did Kinsey, LA Confidential, Hoosiers, and just did Quiz Show.
Well, we got Kinsey in there. That's new for you.
Yeah.
The other two. Repeated.
Yeah, that's true. I'm talking. There's not
Number five was Diner for me. Number four, Hudsucker Proxy. Number three, This Boy's Life.
Yeah.
Loving this boy's life. I got a repeat coming up, though.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to admit it. But my top two have a couple things in common.
Yeah.
50s love movies about the 50s love their narration. I don't know if that's a byproduct of Wonder Years, which I know took place in the 60s, but a lot of narration. People kind of think of period pieces and warm, fuzzy feeling with narration. Mm. Especially, also, a lot of time it's told with like an adult talking about his childhood, which yep. was, you know, 30 years ago in the 50s. So he's narrating as an adult, much like Wonder Years. But they're both narrated and also I don't like either director.
Why? Number one and number two, you're talking about?
Number one, number two. Don't like the director.
All right.
And here we go with number two for me, Badlands.
Terrence Malick.
God damn it, I love this Badlands.
Terrence Malick starring Sissy Spacek and fucking Sheen.
73. Yes.
Never saw it.
Martin Sheen.
I know a lot about films
Sissy Spacek. Originally Don Johnson, I was auditioned for the role of Kit, but it's based on an actual true life account of a guy and his teenage girlfriend who went on a killing spree
in
1958.
Oh, yeah, this is Starkweather, right? Charles Starkweather?
Yes, that's right, Brian. Yeah, look at you.
Yeah.
Beating the Geeks.
I know trivia.
I know a thing or two
about it. I may not know films, but I know trivia.
Received a place in the film reference book of 1001 movies you must see before you die, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Which I miss movies. I've seen her lugging that thing around.
Well, that's an awful lot of movies.
1001? Not, not that many.
Anyhow.
Actually, it is quite a bit. That's like 5 years worth of viewing for me. But still.
Does it hold up?
Yes, it definitely holds up. I
is
watched
it long
this with
and
the girl.
Slow like the rest of Malick's
it
movies?
Is, it is nothing like Thin Red Line. It is nothing like the movies that he makes. Now, I can't say that. It's not stream of consciousness. Okay. It's not just like fucking butterflies
not,
floating about.
You're not floating.
I feel like
wind.
You know this is probably how Sean Penn feels on a swing right now. Let's just swing with him with the breeze going and let's get inside his head.
Holy crap!
Let's get inside his headspace. It's like he makes movies that you have to be fucking high and on Robitussin to actually get into. But no, this is a straightforward movie. Robitussin. I know that I've brought up before. I know that True Romance, which is one of my all time. Oh God, it's good. That takes a lot, borrows a lot from Badlands.
Right.
It's almost an homage at times. It even opens with the same
Badlands
song.
Is almost a Bonnie and Clyde type.
The same steel drums.
Right.
And there is some Bonnie and Clyde-ness to True Romance as well. But if you like True Romance, you can go back to 1973's Badlands, and it's Martin Sheen, and he plays a sociopath named Kit, and he just kind of wanders onto some property and sees a girl that he likes who's out front, and I think she's like skipping rope or something or cleaning up some leaves, and he's like, hey, you should come with me. And one thing leads to another. There's some good old-fashioned American violence that takes place, and they kind of go on a cross-country killing spree, loosely based on the real-life murder spree of Charles Starkweather and his girlfriend, Carol Ann Fugit. And it's narrated by Holly, who is played by Sissy Spacek. And Malick didn't want it dripping in the nostalgia of the 50s, so he kept the 50s kind of most of it took place in rural America, so it's kind of out in farmland.
Rural
America. And but
there's two R's in there, buddy.
Kit, rural?
Rural.
Are you really going to fucking kill the mouse?
I just want to hear it more than once.
I can't roll my R's. I got to do the drag thing. I sound like I'm gargling.
Oh, yeah. That's not bad.
But
not
bad. I don't roll my R's. Well, that's all throat.
That's not bad, though.
I would be made fun of if I was grew up in Mexico.
But you didn't, thank God.
I can't remember what I was going to say next.
Terrence Malick, the 50s. He is rural America.
Yeah, so it's he's wearing like, you know, T-shirts and jeans, which is like, you know, people wear that today. I wear that today.
Yeah.
But in the 50s, that's kind of where everyone started wearing it, thanks to Marlon Brando. And
the Wild One.
The Wild One as well. I think the first time anyone ever wore a T-shirt, Brian, this little piece of trivia, was in on the waterfront.
Really?
I think so.
First time anyone wore a T-shirt?
On screen, yeah. Like an undershirt.
No,
that's all that they're wearing. I'm pretty
that
sure.
That can't be
on the
right.
Waterfront.
Wait, what's your face fucking? Oh, well, yeah, all right.
Talking about, man.
I was thinking about Psycho. What's your face wore a bra?
But Badlands, it is slow in the sense that there's not a whole lot of action like you would see today, but it is one of the golden movies in the 70s, which was the golden era, a lot of people will say. And this actually, when it came out, even overshadowed Mean Streets.
Mm.
Which was Scorsese's first big.
Yeah, but that was not a big film. That was a small film.
It was what made Scorsese. I mean, that's when people started paying attention to Scorsese.
Yeah, but
like,
after
do the right
fact,
thing was.
It was an anticipated film. He was a nobody. He wasn't.
No, but it made a bunch of noise. Much like Pulp Fiction made a bunch of noise for Tarantino. I'm going to say that it was definitely Scorsese's Reservoir Dogs.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to nitpick on that.
But Badlands, very good movie. And it's Malick when he was still making movies that people like you and I could follow.
How about that?
Yeah.
Give me a few movies I got to see. Number one for me. You all right, buddy?
Yeah, I was highly distracted. I lost my fake cigarette.
Number one for me. Crossover.
Uh-oh.
Diner!
Ooh!
How could Diner not be number one? I fucking love Diner. Diner's my all-time favorite film. It's 1982. Written and directed by Barry Levinson. His debut film, as Anderson said, I agree with everything he said. He was nominated for an Oscar for Best Screenplay.
What did you just say?
I agree with everything he said about Diner.
No, you don't have to put the Diner part.
I do. I have to qualify it.
I think that's the first thing you've ever uttered those words in my direction.
Diner.
Because they feel weird. Because, I mean, I know you do it to Corolla like pretty much every episode, probably. I agree with everything you said.
Yeah, you know what? I was in Corolla mode right there. Like, right on, boss. Whatever
Did you
say.
Forget where you were for a minute?
Yeah, for a second.
I agree with everything you say. And then you looked up and you looked like
it's
a deer
like
in the
muscle
headlights.
Memory. It's just sense. You know, like I had the headphones on. I'm talking to a microphone.
I
got to
say, it felt weird hearing you say that to me.
You got it, boss. No, oh, I did it again.
Mm-hmm. And then you go.
That's right. Anyway, looking good, boss. Oscar nominated for Best Screenplay. Lost Anderson. Can you guess what it lost to?
What? No.
1982. We should do this more often.
God, yeah, I'm not good with that though. I don't like trivia.
If you said Gandhi, you were correct.
Oh, you know what I'm gonna say?
What?
Gandhi.
Oh, fuck. 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, set in Baltimore, 1959. One thing I noticed, by the way, as I was researching, is a number of movies came to mind. Like, oh, I should look that one up. Oh, I should check that one out. Movies that are set in the 60s didn't start feeling like the 60s until the Beatles came around. So movies that were set in the early 60s very much feel like the 50s. Like, for example, I was thinking, oh, American Graffiti, that's for sure 1950s. Nope, 1962. Before the Beatles came around, 60s felt an awful lot like the 50s.
I think of the 50s when I think of the Beatles, so that's weird.
That is very strange because they didn't exist.
Like that thing you do. I was thinking that was the 50s.
No, 60s. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Turns out 60s, yep, yeah.
Exactly.
Like Wanderers. I was thinking 50s. Turns out 60s. Turns out early 60s.
Mad Men. Yep.
First season of Mad Men feels a lot like the 50s. That's early 60s.
That's exactly right. The 60s were essentially
Outsiders,
the 50s until 60s? The Beatles.
Must be because it's not on my list. Rumblefish.
Was that?
60s.
60, there you go.
I believe so.
Anyhow, number one for me, Diner, Far and Away.
Okay.
That was a very quick number one because we talked a ton about it.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas movie.
Here comes my number one. Mm-hmm. Many, it was probably well over a year ago, we did Top 5 Guilty Pleasures, Brian.
Yes, with Chris Gore.
My number one.
His number one was
okay, all right, let's not upshot. Don't even bring that up because then no one can even hear what I'm saying after that.
That's true.
It just trumps everything.
Sorry.
Now you have to say. I mean, I think we just talked about it, but
Chris Gore's number one guilty pleasure of all time was Schindler's List.
That's not funny. You should never say Schindler's List while laughing.
I'm sorry.
You go to Jewish hell.
I was crying, actually. Yeah. Sorry.
Like, much like you were on Beat the Geeks.
That's exactly right.
9/11.
Tears of joy.
What?
Oh, no.
What the hell did you just say?
I'm not
confused. I don't even understand how that's a funny joke.
Okay, number one for you.
Was that the chemo? That
move? Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Tears
is.
Of joy for what? Never mind. I don't even want to explore that. Jesus Christ.
Tears of joy.
Right now, you're looking at me like deer in the headlights. Again, Brian, did you forget where you were?
Tears of joy.
Jesus Christ. Sorry. I heard your tears of joy.
I had to say it
twice. I'm not responding. Stand by me.
Yeah.
Stand by me.
One.
Sums up what I know is to be the 50s better than anything else I can think of.
Why do you feel guilty about this?
Because
Rob Reiner. There was another movie you loved by him, wasn't there? He just came up. Or we talked about this again. Like we talked about this like 2 months ago.
This is the only one.
Wow.
It's the only one.
Based on The Body by Stephen King.
Which
why
they the studio changed the name from The Body to Stand By Me because they were concerned that it was going to sound like a sex movie or some kind of male bodybuilding movie.
Can't have that,
thing, guys. If the movie is good, word of mouth will take over, and it's not like you're going to lose out because
yeah, and just send Rob Reiner around on a publicity tour, and people realize it's not about bodybuilding.
It's the story of Gordy, Chris, Teddy, and Vern in September of 1959. The film is narrated by the author Gordy. Richard Dreyfuss is the narrator. Kiefer, he's the older kind of evil guy who finds the dead body, played by Ace. His name's Ace, played by Kiefer. Rob Reiner, they credit the movie with being as good as it was because Rob Reiner went out and found four boys who basically were the characters that they played. Will was awkward and nerdy and shy and very uncomfortable. This was all said in an interview by the guy that played Will. What the fuck's his name?
Will Wheaton.
Yeah. Thank you.
His name is Will.
River Phoenix at the time was cool, and he was really smart and passionate about everything he did. And Jerry was one of the funniest people you'd ever met, Jerry O'Connell, either before or since. And Corey was unbelievably angry and an incredible amount of pain and had an absolutely terrible relationship with his parents.
Well, he was having sex with Michael Jackson.
People, I don't think that was true.
No, it's
alleged.
True. Oh, it's true.
The Jackson estate does not like to hear such things, nor do I.
Allegedly.
Right? Not funny.
It's alleged.
Jesus. We got to cut so many things out of this episode.
Logan's got to get to work.
And one last little – it's the story of four boys who walk train tracks and get sucked on by leeches as far as I can tell.
Oh, yeah. The leech scene. The vomiting scene too.
They hear about a dead body and they go and they – and the whole episode – the whole movie is about them. It's based on a Stephen King
story. This is such a perfect movie for kids. You know what I mean? For like teens, adolescents. This is a rite of passage.
Coming of age. Yeah. Just going and it's so basic.
Seeing the movie is a rite of passage.
So, yeah, exactly. I totally agree. And it's just – it's good. It's
– I think kids these days can enjoy this movie.
I wonder – it's been a few years since I've seen it. Like, I wonder if parents would be like really upset with the leech scene. Like that is just going
it's
too far.
Pretty tame by today's standards.
But today's standards though have become so fucking uptight.
Dude, Austin Powers drank shit 5 years ago.
Yeah, but that's gross. It's fine with the scat stuff. Anything sexual though, it's like, oh no you don't.
Well, it's not like they were getting pleasure.
That leech was sucking on his penis.
He fainted.
He did. He did faint. Kiefer claims that during the shooting of the movie, they were by a Renaissance fair, and the cast and crew attended and bought some cookies. Unfortunately, the cookies turned out to be pot cookies. And 2 hours later, the crew found Jerry O'Connell crying and high on the cookies somewhere in the park.
That explains a lot. He's a nice guy, by the way. He's a huge fan.
He's one of the superest, nicest guys. Yes. I met him over at Corolla. He's never been on Loveline. I don't know why. But he's like, in your face. He's in your face. Like, he comes up. I was just trying to go to the bathroom. We just finished his show up. And I'm trying to just navigate my way across the kitchen area. And he blocks my way over to the bathroom. Hey, how are you? Name's Jerry. What's your name? Yep. He's one of those guys. It's like,
I had that same experience with him at Corolla's.
Yes. So weird.
Nice guy.
Think he's still on the cookies? He might still be on those cookies.
Him and Rebecca Romaine.
He's never given up the cookies.
So that's my 5-1 there, Brian.
That's a
one
great
to
choice, number one.
I like this episode. I liked thinking about being stuck back in the 50s. If you haven't seen – I can safely say if you haven't seen any of the five on my list, they all hold up. I stand by all of them. Better than
stand
Enemy
by
Mine.
Me. And
each
I will
of them
say that
– are better than Enemy Mine.
I think this list, because it's movie period pieces, movies set in the 50s, these are films that hold up very, very well. So if you're looking for recommendations of movies to see, I'd say these 10 movies, there's 10 good ones here that you can enjoy.
That should be our new Mendoza. Online, like a movie you haven't seen, maybe, and I'm like kind of on the fence, or you're on the fence about seeing it, and you can right. say better or worse than Enemy Mine.
Enemy Mine is bad.
It wasn't bad. It's I mean, bad. Considering its time, it came out in a bad era of movies, Brian.
Whew.
1985, all those movies look
Terminator like that. Came out the year before.
It's a very valid point you just made.
Oh, what a breakthrough.
God damn it.
I know.
All right, one last time. My 5-1 before to the also-rans and the listeners' top
five.
Number
listener.
Five for me, Diner. Number four for me is a movie that seems to elude me right now because my notes are all fucked up, per usual. I'm never a good student until college.
I'll do 5-1.
Hudsucker Proxy. Yeah. My number three, This Boy's Life. With actually, you know what? Of all the five movies on my list, probably my favorite. But it was less 50s than the others.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Badlands. Number one, Stand By Me.
Number five, Kinsey. Number four, L.A. Confidential. Three, Hoosiers. Number two, Quiz Show. Number one, oh, you got to see Diner. Diner's fantastic. Diner.
I agree with your Diner. The other ones are sterile and cold.
Sterile!
And harsh, except for Hoosiers, which is a sports movie. Now,
you think L.A. Confidential is sterile?
I'm a little bit surprised you didn't bring up Back to the Future, which, if it was a 50s movie, would have to be on both of our lists.
Yes.
And it'll probably even be
film.
Number one. However, and I have a feeling it's going to be on the listeners' list. However, here's my little pricky way of saying, does not qualify. Do you agree?
Yes.
And this is why. The movie, because Jillian immediately, when I brought up the topic to her, my fiance, she said, oh, Back to the Future. And Prickly Anderson said, oh, no, it does not work because of this. It takes place in the 80s. The entire movie is seen through his eyes.
Yep.
He is the main protagonist. And that's in the 80s. He goes back. He travels to the 50s.
Right.
But he is seeing the 50s through 80s eyes. So it's not a movie set in the 50s.
If it was on your list, I would allow it because it is about the 50s. You know what I mean? It's a 50s experience.
It's in every sense,
out of water.
In the word, it's in every sense of the word, it's about the 50s. But it's about the 50s much like if you saw a movie where it was about a guy studying the 50s.
Yes, I would allow it, but I would not put it on my list.
Right.
Listener top five, Logan.
All right, number five. Just beating out The Sandlot by one vote.
Sandlot.
Hoosiers.
Here's the problem with Sandlot, though. It's the 60s. I'm pretty sure it's the 60s.
Oh, okay. Well,
good okay. movie, though. Great fucking movie.
Yeah.
But and I could be wrong. Let me know.
Okay.
But I think it's the.
But number five was Hoosiers.
There you go.
It just beat out Sandlot by one vote.
Here's the problem, though. It's Hoosiers, a sports movie. So is Sandlot.
Was that a problem?
Because they're sports movies before they're 50s movies. But anyways.
50s is
number
a
four could be controversial, but because it started in 1947 in advance, is The Shawshank Redemption.
No. Spans the generations.
It's a prison movie.
Yeah, spans the generations.
So that,
prison. Anderson,
that
is 50s is
prison
not a genre.
Is, prison is prison, whether it's 50s, 60s, 70s. It's prison.
Yeah, L.A. Confidential is like a noir-like thriller.
Some great 50s prison rape, though.
There is no year in prison.
That's wow. right. No year in the big house.
Good stuff.
Number three.
No, it's bad stuff.
L.A. Confidential.
Yeah.
Number two, Stand By Me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And with a landslide, number one, wow. Back to the Future.
See?
You know, well, here's the thing about Back to the Future. About. I'm gonna say no, and here's why.
Say no. Sorry, listeners. Anderson
right,
says
also,
no.
Some also rans. In Cold Blood. Check
oh,
that
well,
one.
Oh, okay.
Really good. And that definitely stands up as well. Inventing the Abbots. I don't know why, but people didn't like this movie. I love this movie. Liv Tyler, very good movie. Invented the Abbots, 1996, I believe it came out. The Last Picture Show. Peter Bogdanovich actually made a good film, believe it or not.
What?
I love The Last Picture Show. Go check it out. And holy God, is she hot in this movie. She is so almost next to perfect. Sybil Shepherd. She's next to perfect in this movie.
Is this Marlon Brando?
It actually ruined Peter Bogdanovich's marriage because he fell in love with her as well. He actually saw her on the cover of a magazine. He's
wow.
like, she needs to be in my movie. Put her in his movie, and then ended up cheating on his wife
oh.
with her. But she's goddamn next to perfect.
Such a cliche.
Quiz Show, which you had, an angel heart. takes place in 1955. Does one of my all-time favorites. Holy shit, I love Angel Heart. But you know what? We're going to save that one for another day. We're going to save that for top five twists, which I don't know how we're ever going to do that, Brian, but we have to do it because
one movie I'm surprised did not come up on the listener's top five was Pleasantville. And I'm wondering if
you know
why?
Yeah, that's horseshit. It's a horseshit.
I was actually going to bring it up because
that movie's horseshit.
It actually should have been number five. I'm just now noticing that.
Fuck
that
skipped movie.
Over it.
Fuck it. What? God, that movie was boring.
What?
It's just Dollsville, man. From the beginning of that.
No, it's Pleasantville.
Look at the apples red. Now other things
well,
are turning color.
Top five,
it's a
so
metaphor
it's
for how
irrespective.
They're just taking away our imagination.
It doesn't matter.
Crushing our dreams.
It doesn't matter. It's 11.
Fuck
a little
that movie. I hate that movie. Fuck that movie.
Good Night and Good Luck, which Mike Catherwood would mention earlier tonight. That could absolutely make
that
the list.
That definitely could have made the list, as could have Guilty by Suspicion, which I always remember. An Earl Winkler movie.
And very, very, very close. The one movie I had to leave off in favor of Kinsey. And looking back, I might switch them. Big Night. Love Big Night.
Big Night. You know what? I need to go
Big
back
Night.
And see that Big Night. The only
Big
thing
Night.
I remember about Big Night.
Tucci.
So Tucci and Monk is.
Yeah. Tony Shalhoub.
Is the thing I remember is my dad loved it, which made me hate it because I was still like rebelling. And the last 5 minutes of the movie is uncut. It was just one long scene of either Shalhoub or Tucci frying an egg.
Tucci.
And I remember thinking, this is art house shit.
Yep. It was great. I loved it. It was a great scene.
We also have to mention
Who's
American
talking?
Graffiti.
Who's talking?
No, we don't. That takes place in 1962.
That's the 60s.
Then they're wrong again.
They
I talked about that. Were you tuned out?
Yeah, he tunes out. I don't blame him.
I'm updating the website. Yeah. I'm counting listener top fives.
He's surfing Facebook looking for chicks.
Looking for Amazon Insta
say,
streams.
The 90, thank you for the 90 minutes we're actually talking into microphones is crucial to update the website.
Next week, top five anti-heroes.
Yeah, it's a good episode. Check it out. Top 5 Anti. I mean, it'll be a good episode. Top 5 Anti Heroes next week. Check out Anderson and Brian. You can, .com, I should say. You can comment on our episode, which we appreciate. The Dave Damashek episode, by the way. Lots of thunder, no pun intended.
Really?
A lot of action amongst the listenership.
Yeah, I thought that people would want to hear that story.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we got to do that.
So check that out and comment on our episode. Send us ideas for top 5. Vote on our top 5s. Etc. Etc. Download our Sniff Tracks. It's available now for $1.99. Support the show if you can, and hopefully you've listened to that, enjoyed it. Miss Movies Minute. It's available at hitormissmovies.com. My episode up currently. Anderson's episode also up currently. Hitormissmovies.com.
I've been on it before.
You have?
Yeah, I've been on with Katie and I did.
Oh, yeah, before
childhood
it was on iTunes.
Movies.
Yeah, yeah, before it was on iTunes. Yeah, it's on iTunes now too. So
she's doing
out.
Quite well apparently.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
she's
fantastic.
Like new, noteworthy, and she was up there. I saw a tweet that she was bragging because she was up there with somebody famous. Who was it? I can't remember. Oh, Woody Allen.
Catherine Reitman.
Woody Allen had something, and she was up there with like right next to Woody Allen.
Nice.
And on the
I feel. Don't you feel like a proud papa? Like two gay proud papas?
I wish I could feel that way, but not. I just think, oh, iTunes doesn't matter then. That's how I feel.
Oh, dick. Oh, my God. He's a bad person. Next week, top five anti-heroes. I think you'll like it.
Miss Moves, I'm kidding around.
Until then, Anderson.
We're doing it for Van Gogh. It is now.